Today's program is brought to you by Copper and Kings, pure copper pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. For more information, visit copperandkings.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
It's episode 163, and we are archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Happy American Craft Beer Week, everybody.
And happy Queen's Beer Week.
Happy Queen's Beer Week, that's right. It's actually three significant weeks right now. It's also Mead Week. It's Mead Week. But I doth decree that it is Mead Week.
The yet not fully realized Mead Week.
Yeah.
But more on that later.
Just take a claim. It's good.
So there are a couple. We'll start with a little bit of fermentation news. It's not often that we have pretty impactful fermentation news, but we do this week. So the first is that France has actually built, it's the southeastern town of Albertville. The town's innovative new Savoie Lacté, I'm probably butchering that, plant turns whey, which is a byproduct of cheese manufacturing, also yogurt manufacturing, into methane to make energy that is then sold to France's national power firm. So they're turning whey into power, basically. The region's Beaufort cheese farmers, together with engineers from Valbio, launched the 13 million euro factory last summer, and it's already on track to provide enough electricity to power 1,500 homes. So that's pretty cool that a product of fermentation is going to power part of France. The other big announcement is that the White House just announced the launch of the National Microbiome Initiative, which will be funded by $121 million from the government, plus an additional $400 million from private donors. So the initiative will investigate all manner of microbes, studying the makeup of the tiny bugs found in earth, water, and animals, to name a few. Also, the human gut microbiome specifically will get its share, which is pretty cool considering that recent research projects have found an association between distinctions in individuals' gut bacteria and rates of autism, allergies, depression, and other mood disorders, cancers, and obesity. So they're learning that what's going on in our gut impacts our entire health. So that'll be pretty cool. And that's related to ferments because, of course, a lot of the fermented food that we eat has a biome of its own, and often it can help our microbiome.
Yeah, we've heard lots of stories on the show about people eating fermented foods for their gut health reasons. Sarah Owens, who makes the sourdough bread, was one of them, and Sherelle Passwater also. When she found she had like an intolerance and she started eating more fermented foods, and it definitely helped with her eating habits.
So speaking of Sherelle Passwater, she has a class coming up, right?
Yeah, actually she has two classes coming up. I think one is on, there's one on Saturday that is about the microbiome, funnily enough. And that is at Pioneer Works, and it's May 21st. And then the next day she has a Sauerkraut 101 class at Lefferts Community Food Co-op. So she usually gives really good lectures on all sorts of microbiome stuff, and she's an aggressive fermenter of all things, even things that you didn't know could be fermented.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys should definitely check those out.
And you can find more about that on Facebook, right? By liking her page, Contraband
Ferments. Yes.
Cool. So, as you probably know, Chris and I were gone last week. We were in Iceland. So, we spent an amazing 4.5 days in Iceland. The Iceland Homebrew and Fermentation Club actually brought us up there.
Fagun.
To give a flavors in beer and judging workshop as well. I gave a general fermentation talk on Saturday, and then we judged their homebrew. So, we actually did some pre-recordings, and we're going to have some of the people that we met in Iceland on the show on a future date, but we did just want to kind of talk about how amazing it was. A huge thanks to Siggy, who hosted us. We stayed at his super cute house, and he drove us around for 12 hours on Monday seeing the marathon sights of Iceland. I did take a lot of photos, so I'm actually going to put that out on Twitter over the break. I put them all on Flickr, so you can check them out if you want to see what we did. We did eat a decent amount of skyr. We ate some Icelandic cheese. We drank a lot of beer. I was very fortunate to judge the, and I'm going to say this wrong because I can't pronounce Icelandic worth a darn, but I think it's the Vilda category. Vildi, V-I-L-L-I, which is their wild category. So I judged 15 beers. There were some absolutely amazing beers. It was very cool to see not only the quality, but the variety and inventiveness, I guess, and creativity of the category. So the winner...
How many of them were started with Skyrway?
With Skyrway, about, I think at least four. I need to get a full list from Siggy, but at least I would say like somewhere between three and five were kettle soured with using skyr. The winner of the competition was actually an open fermented in the country of Iceland, or, you know, out in the country, more rural area of Iceland. It was 100% spontaneously fermented, and it was also made with... by foraging some Icelandic herbs, which actually some of them didn't even have English translations.
Wow.
It was a whole new experience. That's the first homebrew competition I've ever judged where I had to have somebody interpret the bottle notes. And I'm pretty sure that Chris and I were the only judges writing in English. Everybody speaks English there. They learn it at a young age. But we were definitely the only ones, I think, writing our judging notes in English. But it was an amazing experience. It was super cool to see. Not only, you know, we drank a lot of the Icelandic craft beers. Beer was only legalized in 1989 in Iceland, so it's a very new industry, and they are doing some absolutely incredible stuff.
The word beer isn't in a lot of the legislation yet, either.
So not only to taste some really cool, delicious home brews, but also some of the professional brews as well. So it's cool. Iceland has a really, you know, very much a national pride, and they're using a lot of ingredients that are native to Iceland or practices in their beers. We had one beer that was made by Borg that was actually a smoked malt, and they smoked the malt over sheep dung, which is a traditional practice. It was a traditional way of smoking both fish and meat there. So, and that was delicious. That was actually a two-year-old beer, but I thought super cool, right up my alley.
Smoke the malt over sheep dung. Yeah, sheep dung is totally your alley.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Anyway, more about Iceland, but we just have to give a huge shout out because it was just super cool in so many ways. Beautiful country,
ways,
amazing people.
So many ways. Yes. So many ways.
I can't wait to hear about it. It's about we'll put that up in about like 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, I think so. Depending, it might go up the week I am gone, right before NHC.
Yep.
But to be determined.
Yeah, well, yeah, guys, stay tuned for those because they're going to be super interesting.
Yeah.
Really quickly, a couple local announcements. Joshua Bernstein, myself, and Tyson Ho are having the third annual Solstice Session at Arrogant Swine. Go to joshuamburnstein.com to find that out, find out more about that. But basically, we're going to have 25 different beers and a whole hog, and it's going to be beautiful and lovely in honor of the solstice. Mary is making some stuff for that. I'm making some stuff for that. It's also Kelso's 10th anniversary weekend that weekend. This is June 18th, and I'm very excited for the events happening with that. Also, I would be remiss not to mention this right now. I think you heard a little bit about this last week while I was talking to Julia Hertz in the pre-recorded take, but signed a lease on a space in Long Island City, so we will be opening Fifth Hammer Brewing Company this year, and I'm very, very excited. Hopefully this year. You know, now the work begins, but I'm very excited about that. But today, what's going on, Rachel?
Well, because it's unofficial, official, whatever.
It's officially unofficial.
Mead week.
It's
officially
is what you make
unofficial
it.
Mead week. And also to celebrate you guys going to Scandinavia, even though mead is not very abundant in Iceland itself, it's definitely part of ingrained Norse mythology and all the other Scandinavian countries. Also, so today we have a good friend of mine, Lana Guggenheim.
Hello.
Lana Guggenheim. Welcome to Fiona.
Yeah, welcome.
It's great to be here.
Actually, you know what? Tell us about yourself. So we got you here for Mead Week. Why do we have you here for Mead Week?
Because I like to make mead, and I like to feed it to people and watch their expressions when they have it for the first time.
Yes, and this is a good week for it. How long have you been making mead?
A couple of years now, two or three, if memory serves correctly. I think closer to three and a half, actually, now that I'm sitting down to do math about it. I actually got started through my medieval reenactment hobby, and I went to an event called Penzic. And it's 2 weeks long, it's very intense, and there's lots of homebrewers who overlap with living history folks because food history is very much a part of historical reenactment. And I got treated to all sorts of homebrews and not a few totally illegal but delicious home distilled creations. And I came back and visited my friend in his machine shop in Rahway Electric Motors. And I slammed my hands down on his countertop and said, "Arye, we need to make mead right now." And it turns out that he had a growing interest in homebrewing and had some of the supplies sitting around for a year, making his wife anxious since he never used them. And together we started actually brewing, and we've been at it for a few years now.
That's awesome. So, really quickly, just in case, hypothetically speaking, we have any listener that does know what mead is. What is mead?
It is honey wine.
And how is it? Is it all one flavor fits all?
It can be if you believe hard enough. Just like wine comes in many flavors, mead can also come in many flavors. And the basic science is the same. You ferment honey and water to create a fermented alcoholic beverage. But it can be very dry or it can be very sweet. You can add spices or herbs or fruits in any sort of combination that you so desire. I've come across cucumber mead, for example. Not that I would particularly recommend brewing with cucumber, but you can do it. And you may get the results that I did not. But you can really do whatever you like and ferment whatever you think would work with whatever flavors you are working with and be as creative as you could possibly imagine being.
What sort of diversity and strength of alcohol have you seen, especially at the Ren Fairs?
Well, Ren Fairs are actually pretty standardized. If you go to the average Renaissance Fair, they usually are buying from a supplier rather than homebrewers. I've seen much more diversity among homebrewers than I have among established brick and mortar stores, which is fine and par for the course, I would believe. I apologize.
That's good.
Well, what's the alcohol content in some of the stuff that you make? Because I know we've had some short meads around here, but you brew very long.
I tend to brew for a minimum of 9 months to a couple of years. One of the things I recently released is 2.5 years old. And being that I've only been brewing for about 3 years, it's pretty much one of the oldest meads that I have been able to make ever. But I've heard of meads that are 10 years old. I've tasted a few that are 5 years old. And I've tasted some that are a few weeks old. So the ones that are very short, the sack meads tend to be in the lower percentage alcohol, if memory serves, anywhere from 3 to 5%, kind of like a super sweet wine. But I've also had things that are, hitting around 18%, almost like a champagne. And in fact, people have very often used champagne yeast in order to create a dry mead the same way you would create a dry wine.
Mm-hmm. What did you just call that meads?
Sack meads.
Sack meads.
Sack meads.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's really sweet still.
Really sweet. Very short.
Oh, wow. So you
if
don't
you have a sweet tooth, make sack meads.
But you can also make dry short meads, too.
You can also make dry short meads, but I tend to prefer to bottle it for an amount of time and wait and see what happens. And just like, all right, put you in the basement. Surprise me in a year. We'll see.
Have you had any, aside from the cucumber one, have you had any failed concoctions?
I also had a pumpkin mead, which I really wasn't too crazy about. None of those are my creations, for the record. But, going to these random events, as I tend to do with the few off hours that I have, I've come across some very experimental brews, and some of them are delicious, but I think the pumpkin and the cucumber, I'm not sure how well gourds and cucumbers and zucchinis tend to ferment.
I've had a delicious cucumber mead, actually.
I would very much look forward to hearing how that worked out. The only one that I've had was very interesting, but I don't think I'll come back for a second hit.
Yeah.
Because I know that people make fermented cucumber dishes, but those dishes are not often paired with honey. So I think I would have to shop around for a good honey that would work, a sort of drier honey rather than a wildflower or clover, perhaps perhaps even killer bee, but killer bee has a very strong flavor. I would have to find a lower sugar honey in order to ferment it in a liquid and see what comes out of that.
Yeah.
So you don't use champagne yeast?
I do use champagne yeast.
You do use champagne yeast.
But that's not the only yeast that I use.
What other yeast do you use?
The champagne yeast I use is EC118. That's a very popular one. And I tend to use another yeast called D47. That's for the sweeter meads. It's not YEast Sweet yeast, which is for sweet meads. That tends to finish at around 8 or 10%. I tend to prefer a little more alcohol content than that. So I tend to use D47, yeah. Which ostensibly is supposed to be for mid-level wines, like semi-sweets. But when I use it for my mellow mels, my fruit meads, because of the extra sugar of the fruit, the finished result has more alcohol, but also more sweetness. So I get exactly what I want.
And that you said that because that's normally a wine yeast, right? The D47, like a white wine yeast.
Are these
typically
both dry yeasts too?
The EC118 is a dry yeast. That's a champagne yeast. D47 is actually, if you go online and start trolling around through forums like I did when I was first interested, going, what's mead? What is this new and magical world? I saw D47 popping up again and again and again as a type of yeast that produced very solid results and that people were very happy to make fruit-based meads and other wines with as well. Generally, if it's been used for wine for a while, I'm much more likely personally to try to go for that. I tend to prefer my meads to go in the similar way that wines tend to do. That's just a personal preference, but other people tend to make bragos, which is a combination of grains and meads so that they get something that's more like a beer or they'll add hops. That's not my personal preference, but I've definitely come across people who do that and generally prefer that kind of other thing. So they'll use different yeasts and things that are much more beer-like, and I tend to go more wine-like.
Love it. We're going to take a really quick break. Thank you very much, Lana Guggenheim, for joining us. We'll
thank you.
In just a moment of MedBot. The MedBot.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, the executive producer of Heritage Radio Network, also the host of Full Service Radio, and I want to talk to you about brandy. I was lucky enough to visit Louisville, and we all know Kentucky is whiskey territory. However, the best thing I had to drink was brandy. I got to visit Copper and King's Distillery, and they make pure copper pot distilled American brandy aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels, matured with rock and roll. That's right. Sonic aging. They're playing music to the barrels. The stuff is double distilled, non-chill filtered, unadulterated by bois, sugar, or caramel color. And this stuff is feisty, rambunctious, with a long, smooth finish. The stuff isn't made exactly in the style of an international brandy or a cognac. It's more along the lines of an American whiskey. I can really be honest here and tell you, I'm not just reading you an ad, I'm giving you a tip. American brandy, you're not seeing it everywhere. Copper and Kings is doing it incredibly well, and they're cool people. The distillery is full of incredible art. Like I said, they're playing rock and roll to the barrels. So again, Copper and Kings, pure copper, pot distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. That's copperandkings.com. Drink it neat, put it in a cocktail, sub it for your brown spirits, experiment, have fun, get funky. This stuff is awesome.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are here in the studio with our friend Lana Guggenheim. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
What is Noah's Vice?
Noah's Vice is the name that myself and my oldest best friend, R.A., came up with because we're two Jews and we think we're clever. In Genesis, it talks about how Noah got drunk and fell down, and we thought that was hilarious. So we decided to make a meadery with that name.
So we're making a meadery with that. We're going for it.
We are going for it. We both do have day jobs, and right now we are hobby brewers, but we've been slowly growing more and more. We went from one carboy with nothing else, like not even anything to rack it into, to a capacity right now of about 55 gallons, which is quite a jump to make in 2 years. This is still home brewing territory, but we have been trying to tinker with some established recipes that we have so that we can try to get a very, you know, clean product every single time, very predictable, as well as experimenting with seasonal fruits to try to do some seasonal flavors. And of course, I am fandom trash, so I like to make fandom-based flavors and just play around with that. So we're trying to see how we can make this work. We have officially incorporated as an LLC. We are looking at a couple of different locations in Rahway, New Jersey, which is a very interesting town with very interesting Prohibition era history. So we thought that was an ideal location to start a brewery.
I love it. It's a really good time for meaderies to be popping up. Meadery the mead segment is the fastest growing segment in the alcohol industry right now. And it, granted, it started very, I mean, it's, there's hardly anybody in it right now in meads. Like, we don't have very many meaderies in the States. And so it's very exciting.
Well, there's a few on the West Coast, actually, that are doing quite well. But from what I understand, trends in terms of food and drink sometimes will happen on the West Coast before they happen on the East Coast. Yeah. But correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Well, oh, no, Moonlight Meadery's been around. How long has he been open?
For several years.
And he's...
There used to be a wonderful meadery on Long Island called Long Island Meadery, of blessed memory.
Yeah.
But it's been dead for a few years. Yeah. There is another meadery in New Jersey called Melavino. They're quite excellent. They've actually been talking to us. My friend Aria has been talking to them for quite some time, and they've been very helpful. They are very excited to see another meadery pop up in New Jersey, which is really nice.
Sergio's great, and he's a part of the founding members of the American Mead Makers Association as well. Have you become a member of that? That's one of the first things they recommend to do as a starting meadery.
Well, join, I know what American I'm doing Mead when Makers I get Makers. Home this evening.
It's awesome. And actually, anybody out there, you can go to amma.org, and you can become a member as an affiliate or a fan, but there's a lot of really great mead makers resources and a bunch of people who are your friends for getting into it. They just had their first annual national meeting where they talked about a lot of legislative issues around the country.
That's actually precisely what we've been receiving help with Melvino. They actually really paved the way, especially in New Jersey, because the legislature of New Jersey had no idea what mead was or how to deal with it. It turns out they ended up treating it much like a winery, but they still had to wrap their heads around it, and there was a lot of hoops to jump through. So in a very real way, Melavino paved the way in New Jersey for other meaderies, and by the time we get up and running, we would be the second, which is not a bad place to be as far as I'm concerned. They're really quite wonderful people, and they have great meads, so if anyone's listening, do check them out.
So you poured us a mead over the break. Tell us about this mead.
This is my personal favorite. I call it Thorin Oaken Mead because, like I mentioned before, I have a very strong affiliation for certain types of literature and movies. When this was brewing as a cherry mellow mel, it was a dark, bright red, and I said, man, that looks like blood, like how Thorin bled out on the mountainside. I added a little bit of cinnamon. I also added some vanilla bean, and very later on, as it was aging, in like the last couple of months, we blanched some acorn, so we leached all the tannins out of it. So that way no one gets blind from it, which is probably good. And then we stuck them in there for about a month, and the result is a kind of a flowery, almost nutty afterflavor. So that's the oak in the Thorin Oaken Mead. And then I drew a little mountain and a little dragon on every single bottle because I totally am not obsessed at all. But I'm very proud of it. I feel like it has a very full mouthfeel and has a lot of sweetness in it from the vanilla and the cherry that I really like. But it still has quite a lot of alcohol.
What is the ABV on this?
So we don't have the ability to test that. So the total guesstimating based on tasting it, I would say 13%. But we are right now homebrewers. We're not official anything yet. We don't have a lot of the equipment to actually measure specific gravity either when we start or when we finish. So
I'm getting you a hydrometer for Christmas.
Please get me a hydrometer for Hanukkah.
But before we continue, for Hanukkah, I'll do it for Hanukkah. Yes, sorry.
You can do it for any day of the week.
We have extra ones.
Is the one thing that we've been missing the entire time. And honestly, me and Ari just keep forgetting to get one. We get so excited about new recipes and new seasonal fruits that we just put it in there. And then a month into fermentation, we're like, oh, we didn't get a hydrometer.
And it doesn't really matter. I mean, you're aging him. It doesn't really matter. But it would be interesting.
It will matter.
It will matter eventually because we definitely want to open a brick and mortar store. But we know that this is a little bit farther down the line. This is not happening tomorrow. This is probably happening in a year or three. Right. So right now we're just kind of working on tinkering with recipes, having a good time, and trying to make as many of our friends and family as drunk and happy as we possibly can.
By the way, unless you're looking for spiritual guidance, don't go to amma.org. It's actually meadmakers, mead-makers.org.
Thank you.
amma.org is also probably great for some people.
So we have, I only make lower alcohol meads at home. And I've made a lot of them, but we have a lot of friends who make full strength meads, including Sergio from Melavino.
Yep.
Who's actually going to be in town tomorrow speaking at the New York City Home
Melavino. Actually, this is another great announcement, especially during Mead Week. He actually just launched in New York City and will now be distributed through Remarkable Liquids. He will be available. All Melavino will be available at various mead celebrating places such as Blind Tiger, Barcade, St. Cambrinus.
I love Barcade.
Yeah, they're big meat supporters. All of them. They're all great meat supporters. All the Barcade.
But if they don't care, if your bar doesn't carry, ask them.
Ask for Melavino. Sure. Help our man Sergio.
I really cannot recommend them enough. They're just such great people, and they make such great meats, and they're so nice to us. So please support them.
So I want to ask about... So back to... knowing mead maker. So I know that some people do traditional, you're doing a more traditional way of making.
Yes.
And then we've had a lot of friends that have moved to staggered nutrient additions. So where you get a very, you know, you can get a mead in like a month or so. Mm-hmm. So have you played with that or what kind of...
So I want to
know more about your philosophy.
I actually have deliberately avoided that. And the part of this is my living history background. This is just a hobby for me, but I have studied archaeology and I really do very much enjoy being part of the living history community. And I'm not going to go full Roman where I leave a vat in the middle of a field for 2 weeks unattended. That's probably not going to work out as well for us as it would for them. But I really try to keep things as quote unquote traditional as possible. But I will, of course, source my yeast and I will sanitize properly with Star San and everything else. I, in terms of the actual production, I will not use artificial nutrients if I can avoid it. I try to find it from various grapes or cranberries. Cranberries for nitrogen is something I prefer because I have a personal dislike for raisins, which makes no sense. I will, for acidity, instead of using any tablets, I prefer to actually just slice an orange and try to peel most of the peel off of it. And then I would put that in the vat or sometimes just squeeze a whole lemon in there, which seems very awkward, but in terms of, you know, making things as more historically accurate, minus the lack of hygiene, I'd rather prefer those more historical techniques. And this way, it's kind of a gimmick. It's like, I made this with the techniques that you can do too. You don't need to buy anything that you don't understand. You don't need to do anything crazy. If you have a lemon, you can get the acidity you want. And I kind of like that bit. And I like sharing that with people as well.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
So you brought one other mead.
Yes.
Which I'm going to, Rachel.
It's called a persimmon.
Persimmon. Because saying persimmon and cinnamon together is a little too difficult when you've drunk too much.
Tell us about this as I pour it.
Yeah.
That actually is our second iteration of persimmon. Our first iteration was very sweet. Our second iteration, we used champagne yeast instead of D47, and it came out very dry. I find that it tastes almost like a Riesling. It has a very similar mouthfeel. So it's light, it's dry all the way down. It's really refreshing. I think it would be a very good summer wine type of mead. I'm very proud of it. Very much Ari likes the dry meads, and I think he was very fond of it as well. I don't think he really wanted to give away as much as we gave away to all our friends.
And so how old is this? When did you make this?
The persimmon is 9 months. The thorn oaken mead is 2.5 years. I usually don't let them out until they're about 9 months old. So basically it has to be a baby before it gets out.
This is also delicious. So tell me about the persimmons.
So persimmons, they come in two varieties because traditionally persimmons, you would have to blanch them or do something with them in order to even make them palatable to eat. But they've been breeding persimmons that you can eat straight away. And it happens to be that when persimmons were in season, we just like raided the farmer's market and we got a whole bunch of them. We didn't even know what kind of persimmons they were. We're just like, farmer market persimmons, yes. And when we cut them up and tasted them, they were sweet, which means we didn't have to blanch them. So we started going, oh my gosh, we should ferment these and jam them and do everything with them ever and also eat them raw right now. So we ate some of them and then we brewed some of the others and we actually blanched yet a few to see if we could get a sweeter taste out of already sweet persimmons, because when you freeze them, it breaks down the cell walls and you can get more of those sugars. And we were kind of doing a couple of little home chemistry experiments.
Iced persimmon wine.
Iced persimmon wine. We haven't gotten as far as persimmon wine, I think, because we would need a huge amount of persimmons. And as well, there's a lot of pectin in there. They make things very cloudy. And for my personal preference, even though there's no real taste difference between something that's cloudy and something that isn't, I prefer looking at something that's nice and clear. So I try to, you know, limit the amount of goopy stuff that will be at the bottom of my carboy by the time I'm done.
Pectins are tough. I mean, without using something like...
Right. So I could use that, but I prefer not to for the reasons I mentioned before. It's definitely from my living history community hobby.
So, wait, you guys went to something called a steampunk world fair?
Yeah, so the two meads here are actually left over from a tasting that was done. What, did you do five different meads?
Four
different meads.
I did four.
At a steampunk world fair, which is exactly what it sounds like.
It's three meads and a cider, to be fair.
It's a big group of, like, anachronistic nerds who get together
We wear really weird clothes.
Yeah.
We dance around to music that's definitely at least a little klezmer.
Klezmer inspired.
Which is fine by me.
At least a little klezmer.
At least a little klezmer.
That's the name of my next band for
sure. It should be the name of your next band. And then your next band will be at least a little klezmer, and I will be thrilled to support you.
Actually, one of the bands that usually performs, like as a big headliner at Steampunk World's Fair, performed a couple of months ago at Industry City Distilling, which was an interesting crossover.
Night.
It was a very good concert, yes. Yeah. So you did a tasting at the Steampunk World's Fair, which is a kind of a
Victorian inspired fantasy and sci-fi, a bunch of nerds in costumes kind of event.
And also,
there's a lot of booze that flows at this event.
Yeah,
a
especially
lot.
Absinthe and a lot of homebrews.
A lot of homebrews. Also a lot of distilled things because distilling was becoming very popular in the 19th century.
Yes.
And in general, we have a lot of people who like their alcohols that come to this event. So there's lots of different room parties that will occur, and I hosted one. For the record, though, Jeff Mock Events actually has a history of people kind of sharing their homebrews and just sharing their alcohol, whether they brewed it or not. I actually come from I'm third in line for this. One of the other Jeff Mock events, Wicked Fair, used to have a mead tasting as well from Long Island Meadery before they folded. J&J also did tastings at Jeff Mock events. They would have their little room parties. So I'm actually only third in line in this tradition. But basically, I opened up my room to whoever would come and would like to try my meads.
Yeah.
And
So tell us about the other two meads that
gone. We had these two. We also had something that we called Killer Cardamom. That was a test batch.
That
was only
already.
1 gallon test batch because we had no idea what we were doing.
Was that the Killer Bee honey?
That was the Killer Bee honey with 3 cardamom pods in 1 gallon.
Interesting. Wait, green cardamom pods?
Green.
Okay,
yeah.
So let's talk about Killer Bee honey.
Yeah, please.
Because you mentioned before that it's very strong tasting.
It's a very strong and unique flavor. I mean, it has a sweetness to it because it is honey. It has a certain amount of glucose in it. But because it is Killer Bee honey, it is a very dark color and is a very intense flavor. And when it brews, it won't brew nearly as sweet as, say, clover or wildflower or orange blossom. It has a much darker, more intense flavor. And because of that, I wasn't really sure what to do with it. I picked up some from the Bee folks who are based out in Maryland. I picked that up from an event where they were vending, knowing that I would find something to do with it, but not sure what. And it kind of sat around in our little preparation corner for a while as myself and Aria kicked around ideas. And we decided to make a metheglin, which is a spiced mead. But we didn't go crazy on the spices. We just added 3 cardamom pods, and that was it. And we just waited. It smelled fantastic while it was brewing. It came out almost medicinal quality, and that's not a bad thing. It was a very interesting, dry, spicy mead. So not at all like the sticky, sweet honey stuff that I usually prefer. I think I would add it with something sweet, or you can just, you know, drink it straight, and it's really quite awesome. But it's a very distinct flavor. If you prefer sweeter things, like sweeter wines or ciders, it might not be for you. If you like alcohol that kicks you in the mouth, you want Killer Cardamom.
It sounds like a good digestif.
Yes. Yes, it does. And what was the fourth mead that you made?
The fourth one was actually a cider.
Oh.
And that was an interesting experiment. We kind of combined a cider and a perry, so we used both pears and apples. So a lot of ciders are kind of, like, they come into your mouth and they're like, hi, I'm apple. So we wanted to see if we could do something a little bit different with that. And we didn't want to add too many spices, and we didn't want to add different fruits to overwhelm the apple and pear flavor. So we just kind of left it as is. And the result was a very light flavor. Not diluted, but just very light. And it was very low alcohol as well. Like only 3%. So we called it near cider, which is actually an historical term for a very light cider. We didn't make it up. And that's kind of a very summery drink for people who prefer things light, for people who don't necessarily like alcohol but don't want, you know, Mott's apple juice. This is something that's a little bit more adult in palate but not super strong. And that's very unusual. Both myself and Ari tend to prefer things that are quite alcoholic. So we were definitely experimenting with that one. And as far as what we were going for that was pretty nice. But it's a hit and miss. With Steampunk World's Fair, people really wanted stuff that
they wanted
to get knocked down onto the floor.
I think one day we'll have to do an episode on the alcohol and homebrewing culture of the anachronism people, because it is a crazy
Get some
culture.
SCA folks in
oh,
here.
Yeah.
We
know
your
some
ears
SCA.
Off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we know a lot of those.
Yeah.
we'd be remiss not to talk about how you also work part-time at the Museum of the American Gangster.
I love
what
that
is the Museum of the American Gangster?
Museum of the American Gangster.
I can't believe I haven't been here yet.
It's a museum in St. Mark's, and it is exactly what it says on the tin. It is about gangsters. For those who are unaware, gangsters as a professional class of organized criminals was very much in response to Prohibition, which of course was the 18th Amendment, which essentially outlawed alcohol. So for the first half of my tour, I get to very excitedly talk about, you know, the alcohol laws and how you can distill and how this is different from fermenting and how these different groups arrived because they wanted to basically keep alcohol in the different ways that people would go around the law or just simply break the law in order to get it, which is a lot of fun for me and is a subject near and dear to my heart.
Awesome.
Speaking of criminals, so Vikings. So Vikings.
They weren't criminals. They were acting inside their culture.
Outside their culture. These were yuppies that they were rich and they went Viking. Viking is a verb for going to,
to go a
village
and go to go a Viking.
Viking was more of a career or a job. Then.
Right. The generally by apparently
like
by, at least Icelandic Vikings were born rich or wealthy relatively.
From what I understand,
would go out pillaging and being jerks.
Yeah. From what I understand, in general, when this activity first arose, to go a Viking was a response to a very poor harvest or a very high tax or both. And one would not necessarily go a Viking if you didn't have to. If you already had the resources you needed and the resources to pay the tax that your jarl had levied upon you, then why would you go a Viking? It's a schlep. Like, God. Lindisfarne is really far away, you guys. And so is Ukraine and all these other places where they ended up going. And up the Seine, oh my God, those Frenchies, like, God, no. So you wouldn't necessarily go a Viking if you didn't have to. And when you're talking about Iceland, like, that was a little bit later. And I was not unaware, apparently, that they were necessarily born rich. So maybe that by that time it had become a cultural staple, whereas before had been a necessity. I freely admit
kinda
that
like
my
hippies of the late 70s or something, like, instead of 60s.
Yeah, I freely admit that my expertise is not in Viking culture. However, I know Skadians who are, so I'm happy to bring them in to speak for me, especially if I mess up on my Viking history right now.
I mean, we didn't dive deep into it on our trip, and we look forward to getting back into it. But one little pinging note was, and it did make sense till somebody said it, they're like, Vikings, they didn't drink mead. Look around you. There are no bees here in Iceland. It's too cold for bees to exist.
But there were bees
so
elsewhere
not
in Europe.
Exactly. Yeah, when they went a Viking, they probably discovered their love for mead abroad.
I mean, mead is a fairly old beverage. I mean, you have Tej down in Ethiopia, sure. So anywhere there are bees, which includes the vast majority of Europe, including way up north, you would have the ability to ferment it and create brews, but you could also use it as a preservative. The people would preserve meats and other things with honey because it's such an excellent antibacterial, and you could even use it in healing because of its antibacterial preservative properties. Though, please don't eat your bandage if you do that. That might not work out well for you.
I know. I was looking up. I was Googling, you know, bees in Scandinavia and Iceland and other places. And I fell on Google Books. They have parts of a book called The World History of Bees and Beekeeping. And I kind of fell down that rabbit hole for a little while. But I haven't. I have to find.
Have on Erica.
Well, because I didn't realize like bee hunting was a thing, and it probably still is. But it definitely, you know, before people actually built hives, they'd
have to track them.
Exactly.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, now bee hunting is a thing because of the virus that's killing them all, which is very, very sad. And there was that truck that overturned, and actually a friend of my father's, his name is Schulman, and he lives out in Passaic, New Jersey. He keeps his own hives in his backyard, and he's not a professional beekeeper. Like, he has a day job, but he raises hives. And at one point, then there was a truck that overturned, and it was carrying hives and honey. And there was like basically an APB out for anybody who had experience with beekeeping. And he arrived with his stuff to try to help rescue these bees and help like try to salvage what these animals that were in distress from an overturned truck. So that was an incredible story. It was like sitting in our living room over Passover telling us about how he rescued bees.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Awesome. So that's our show for today. We hope that you
go drink mead.
Yes.
Please drink mead.
There is no excuse for mead not being a thing in New York.
Absolutely.
Like, yes. We love drinking
things. Between Noah's Vice and Melovino, we will fix that for you.
Yes. That's why we started New York City Mead Week.
Yeah.
Which is just what you make it. So make it awesome. Go demand mead.
And if you can't buy mead in your area, you can definitely make it. So we've had several mead shows in addition to this one, but mead is definitely attainable, regardless if you're making a short mead to a medium mead to an actual full-strength traditional mead. Mead is very easy to make at home.
They're
and
all
it's a lot of
meads.
Fun. They're all actually.
And there's so many honeys that you can source here in New York just to support local farmers. And
there are plenty of honeys in the sea.
Yeah.
Also, and just in case you're worried about messing up, don't worry. If you messed up, just put it away in your basement or your attic for a while. Just like keep it, you know,
keep
just
it
keep it around. And it eventually, whatever problems you thought you had will age away.
Maybe. Probably. Most
probably.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, once it turns into vinegar, use it as salad dressing, in which case you've still solved your problem.
Exactly. It's still going to be delicious.
It's
just
still
going to
be amazing.
Be amazing.
Be amazing.
All right, everybody. Be amazing, y'all.
That's right. That's
happy
Mead for
Week. Lana Guggenheim, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Do you have a website yet up for Noah's Vice?
Not at all.
But you will,
well, we
right?
We do have a Facebook page called
Facebook
Noah's
page.
Vice, which we sometimes update when we remember. Basically, whenever we brew, we take pictures of what we're doing, and whenever we bottle it, we take pictures of what we're doing. So every couple of months, there's a couple of random pictures of my hand holding bottles, exclaiming on how delicious their contents are.
Fantastic. Well, you're totally fun and totally inspiring. Yeah. And thanks for listening to Ferment About It.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Wall with no wind on the banks of forgiveness. You clutch to your